Hello and welcome back to the K-Poporama Podcast. My name is Ginonimin, and on this week's show, we are doing another From the Vault special, where we look back at a past K-Poporama Podcast episode. This time, we are going back to episode 56 of the podcast that aired back in June of 2021, where we reviewed one of Korea's most infamous zombie films, In Train to Busan. I'm releasing or re-releasing this episode on the pod right now because of the release of All of Us Are Dead, which is a hotly anticipated zombie drama that dropped on Netflix today, actually, and a show that I actually covered on last week's show if you didn't check it out already. I figured re-releasing this episode would be a great primer for you guys in anticipation of this show. That, and also I need time to watch the show, as I plan on doing a review of the show on next week's podcast, so be on the lookout for that. But without further ado, let's go back in time to June 2021, when I reviewed Train to Busan. Hello and welcome back to another edition of the K-Poporama Podcast. I'm your host, Ginonimin, and for today's episode, we're going to be covering one of the most famous Korean movies to come out in the past 5 years, and it's a 2016 blockbuster international hit called Train to Busan. Now, I'm sure for a lot of you listeners out there, you've probably seen this movie already, but for this particular podcast, we've actually haven't covered the movie yet, so that's what we're going to be covering for this week's episode. But before we get into that, of course, if you like the podcast and you like what we do, don't forget to like, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. We're available on just about any podcast platform you can think of. And for an Apple podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave a 5-star rating on the podcast. It helps it a lot. And last but not least, our social media will be the podcast description below. Be sure to follow at K-Poporama Podcast on Instagram to follow the latest on the podcast. And if you want to email in and suggest anything related to K-pop or K-dramas, be sure to email us at kpoprama@gmail.com. But without further ado, let's get into today's episode. So to start, I do want to give a quick refresher to this movie, as you know, this movie is, at the end of the day, a five-year-old movie, and some of y'all might have forgot what exactly happened in this particular movie, so I kind of feel, considering it's a bit of a dated movie, I feel like it's probably right to give a quick summary to what happened in this film. And this is also kind of a disclaimer to some of y'all who might have not watched this movie at all. So if you're actually one of those people who haven't watched Train to Busan, please do yourself a favor and listen to my quick TLDR. Or in fact, actually do not listen to my quick refresher to the movie and do yourself a favor and go and watch the film. Because honestly, I'm not really going to try to say things in a spoiler-free way in this pod. So please do yourself a favor and watch the film. Enjoy it because it's an amazing zombie film, and then come back to this podcast and just listen to what I have to say, because it's gonna be full spoilers, full everything, uncensored, you name it, if you get what I mean. So yeah, but anyway, for the quick refresher, just in case if y'all forgot, this movie basically follows So Suk-woo and his daughter, Seol Soo-an, as they try to survive the zombie apocalypse while on a KTX train to Busan, while they were on their way to see Soo-an's mother, who, So Suk-woo, by the way, is divorced to Soo-an's mom, by the way, just to add some extra context. Now, this film, for me, hands down, is honestly one of the, not one of the best, but the best zombie film that I have ever watched, ever. And the international reception to this movie honestly proves that, as this movie alone is one of those movies that hit the stratosphere of popularity, in my opinion anyway, as it became a worldwide sensation when it came out back in 2016. And, you know a movie is good if it reaches worldwide popularity. And this movie got that. And it arguably still gets that today, as, people from all over the place are still like watching Train to Busan for the first time, and they are as shocked and enamored at this film as those that watched it back in 2016, and that says a lot. But to go back to the movie, me saying that this is the best zombie film ever, I feel like it's saying a lot because, at the time that this film was released back in 2016, I'd say that time of pop culture is, coming off the back end of a very long period of zombie stuff, like tons of zombie stuff. Like, there were stuff like The Walking Dead. There were just tons of zombie related media within the realm of pop culture all over the place. And, it was really popular at the time, and it was honestly kind of mainstream to do zombie related stuff for at least a good 5 to 7 years, starting from like the late two from the late 2000s all the way up to 2016. But unfortunately, these kind of things kind of come to an end eventually. And by 2016, for a lot of people at that time, myself included, were honestly the sick and tired of anything zombie, because honestly, by 2016, at least for most zombie films or zombie TV shows to come out by that point, all of the same tropes had been done at least a dozen times over at that point. And I think for most people, they just got just sick and tired of anything zombies. And I think for most people at that time, they were all in on the MCU train with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like going full speed at that point, and I think everyone was hopping into that. So to say that this film at least got my interest back into the zombie genre says a lot, because, again, interest in zombie stuff, at least for me anyway, was dwindling at that point. But this movie was so good and honestly made me so excited to watch it because of the way it's just so innovative and so unique for a zombie film. And again, that says a lot because, as I've already mentioned already, a lot of the same tropes in other movies were simply just not done with this film. And that alone makes it worthy of it being great. And honestly, there's just so many things that are just so unique and phenomenal about this film. And I don't think we'll frankly get into all of the nitty-gritty things about it, but I'll try to like summarize it into like a brief overview. But I think most of these things that I'm gonna list right here are things that are just phenomenal about this film. And I think to start, we have to start with the cast. Now, I'm not going to be talking about all of the side characters, as there's kind of a lot for this film, but I will say that everyone in this film has a role and has a place in the story, which honestly, from a writing perspective and from a movie perspective as well, is great because everyone has a responsibility and a role to play in this film, and everyone has a purpose, which is good because sometimes, even in shows or movies, sometimes there's just characters where there's really no purpose to them being there other than to be like aesthetically pleasing or like for other like reasons that honestly do not make any sense. Like sometimes you have that in movies or TV shows, and arguably you could say that for K-dramas as well because sometimes you get characters like that. But anyway, like going back to the cast of this film, it's honestly great. Like, for example, Suk Woo, who's played by Gong Yoo, who, by the way, is a very, very, very popular Korean actor. He does such a great job of portraying the main protagonist of this film as, he does a great job of acting the role of a man who is weary and a cynical businessman, as that is exactly who Sokwoo is at the beginning of this film, as he's totally the dad who is just so caught up in work to the point where he just does not interact with his children. And that's exactly what happens in the beginning of the film. As, in the beginning, like, there's literally a scene where, Sokwoo, like, comes home and he has in his hand a Wii console because he wants to make, Su-Suan, his daughter, happy because, he missed, like, in a very important event that meant a lot to Su-Ann. But unfortunately for him, that particular Wii, actually is something that Su-Ann already has. So, that just adds, like, to all of the awkwardness between both of them, just because of the fact that, Sokwoo is just a businessman who's just busy all the time, which, leads into his eventual character development. As throughout the film, he just grows to be a very empathetic and very selfless man who is willing to protect himself, his daughter, and all of the other survivors in this film while the zombies, go and ruin the world. Which, honestly, when you look at his character from the beginning, is a lot of progression. And honestly, such great character development from a character like him, because honestly, Sokwoo in the beginning is kind of leaning towards the unsufferable side, let's be frank. So to see him just grow into the character that he turns out to be in this film is great. And also, speaking of Sokwoo and Su-Ann, I have to give a shout out to the child actor who played Su-Ann, because she did such a great job, like, playing her role in this film. Like, she acted really, really well. And she absolutely acted like a little girl should in the situation that takes place in this film. Like, she does an incredible job in just being herself, being in such a extraordinary situation. And she does a phenomenal job at that. So I have to just give props to Su-Ann for that. But I think out of the entire cast, aside from the main two characters, main characters, I think everyone's favorite, honest to God, I think everyone will remember who this guy, and that is Yoon Sang-hwa. And he is the brash, burly, badass husband to be in this film. And my God, he is such a badass in this film. And he is just so cool as well. He's played, Yoon Sang-hwa, I mean, is played by Ma Dong-seok, who is a very, very interesting actor in and of itself, as he did a lot of films domestically here and there in the Korean film scene, but this film so happened to be like his breakthrough movie that has led him to a lot of places after this film. But he just does such a great job in playing this character, as he just plays the perfect tough guy for this kind of film, and he was perfect, as there's just tons of scenes where he is just going off against the zombies and just kicking butt, taking names, you name it. And for a good portion of the film, he is honestly the superhero of really of the hour, really, when you think about it. And I feel like it's kind of a power play by the writers to have a character like this, because, like, I just feel like for a character like Yoon Sang-hwa, like, I feel like Ma Dong-seok is the only kind of actor that you could really think of to do a role like this, as he really, without a shadow of a doubt, is built for a role like this, if you get what I mean. Like, he is literally built for this. Like, he's super buff. He's really jacked, let's be honest. And I think this him as a person, because I've seen, like, interviews of him doing like media stuff for this film and like other films, like he comes off very American, if that makes sense. And what I mean by that is basically like his Americanness that he kind of gained from like living in the States for quite a long time, I guess, kind of rubbed off on him a lot. And you kind of see this very brash Americanness about him, which I think, really, when you think about it, just makes the role that he plays in this film this so much sense. And it was just great to see him on camera as he was heroic to the absolute very end. And when the moment comes when he has to sacrifice himself, like, my God, like it was such an emotional part of the film, which I'll get into later, by the way, which because like there's like a specific thing that I want to talk about in terms of like emotion about this film. But I think the last character that I want to make specific note of is probably, my God, like the perfect villain for a movie like this, and it's Yoon Suk. And Jesus, like this guy is pure evil. And the things that he does in this film is just insufferable. Like I feel like if you have to summarize his actions that he does in this film into like a sentence of words, I mean, I could like go off. Like he's just a selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate, self-centered piece of work. Like I have to say as well, like the actor who plays this, who plays Yoon Suk, the businessman, has also played some notable villains in K-dramas such as Mr. Sunshine. I believe he's the Korean collaborator who works with the Japanese in Mr. Sunshine anyway, and he was pretty like evil in that. He was also in Memories of the Alhambra, if you saw that drama as well. He played the villain in that too. I'm guessing the actor seems to like to just play villains a lot, which, to be fair, to give him a lot of credit, he does really well in villain roles from the limited like works that I've seen of with him in it. So, all of that is great. And honestly, his actions, his genuinely evil, mind-boggling actions, is honestly responsible for 90% of the deaths that happen in terms of the survivors on the train to Busan. So, there's all that. And my God, like, I feel like out of all of the zombie films that I've seen, like, I feel like Yoon Suk is the most affecting, if that makes sense. Like, he leaves an impression. Like, I feel like him as a character, this encapsulates like the worst of humanity, if that makes sense. And I think when you think about the zombie genre, I think aside from this being like an action flick slash fantasy thing where like you see the undead rising to attack the living and whatnot, like I feel like the zombie genre does like social commentary on how humanity can be the absolute worst towards itself. Like we all know this, right? Like I'm sure, especially considering the fact that we have gone through a pandemic that seems like forever, we have seen people who, look, I'm sure this is a very nuanced thing to say, but sometimes, like, there's just some people who just do incredibly selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate things to the point where they just purposely, or maybe not purposely, but just sometimes just harm other people unknowingly, and they simply just don't care. And I feel like that encapsulate what Yoon Suk did in this entire film, as he literally was just looking out for himself, and he was willing to sacrifice anyone in his way in order for him to survive. Which, I mean, I guess in the situation that he was in, you could say that he was doing what he could to survive, but my God, he was leaving one hell of a body count. you gotta say. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Rough. Whew. But saying all of this about the characters, another thing I love about this film is how it's structured and how the build-up for this film is great. And this leads into all of the characters that I've mentioned as well, because they managed to grow in this like movie structure as well. So like everyone benefits from it. And what I mean by this is that, you know, this movie really, for all intents and purposes, starts off very subtle. It's very low key when you think about it. Really, when you think about it, like at least for the first 20 to 30 minutes of the movie, might have been shorter, but you get what I mean. Like at least for the first like quarter of the movie, it just shows normal life in Korea, except for the giant smoking gun. You'll literally see this in like the first scene of the film, where a deer gets run over by a truck, right? And then after a while, since the corpse is on the road, you see the body of the deer contort and it moves unnaturally. And the next thing you know, you see that same dead deer stand up and run away, which immediately tells the viewer and anyone really that, you know, the zombies are coming, which, you know, leaves a giant smoking gun for the audience to think about. As you know, I'm sure, you know, for most people they know what's coming really, but for viewers it just gives you this sense of unforeboding, just a sense of dread and fear, because you know, as you see this, most of the characters in the film just leaving normal lives, you know that their lives are gonna change for the worse at any moment, and you just, all you can really do is just feel this dread as the calm is just so deafening while you're just waiting for the zombies to turn and just cause absolute chaos. And when that chaos actually does come, like, my God, does it just create chaos. And the characters just, I feel like they're kind of our representatives in this film, as, you know, they are just fighting for their lives, and they're just absolutely terrified of what is happening. And it's just pure chaos when you think about it, really. Like, it's, the chaos is unrelenting. It's brutal. Like, the action scenes at some points are just brutal, insane. Like, it's just all of the nitty-gritty stuff that you low-key kind of want to see in a zombie film like this, because you want, like, gore and all that shenanigans to happen, because, you know, fighting zombies usually equals that. But, like, you just, yeah, it just, it's just unrelenting. Like, I feel like when I think about it now, like, just looking back at this film, like, this, seeing all of the chaos that the characters go through is kind of like the equivalent of being a boxer in a boxing match. I know this is kind of like doing a kind of a weird sports analogy for this, but it makes sense, I swear. But, like, imagine if you're a boxer, right? And your opponent, who is a fellow boxer, is, you know, punching you in the face, in the chest, in the body, in the shoulder, whatever. And every blow that you take is like the equivalent of a heart and mouth moment in this film, where the main protagonists are like toeing the line between imminent death or escaping from the zombies. Like, literally, like, every like dramatic heart and mouth moment in the action sequences and basically the whole film in general just feels like getting punched in the face. And it's just exciting, it's just adrenaline pumping, it's incredibly intensive stuff. And again, that this comes down to just excellent writing and just excellent pacing from the writers and directors of this film, as they do all of this stuff incredibly well. as they maintain the drama throughout the film, and it keeps the suspense throughout, which is brilliant and fantastic. And I think I think a lot of this drama and suspense kind of just comes down to the nature of the zombies themselves, as they, compared to other zombie films or TV shows that I've seen, are they're basically the Olympic track runner type of zombies, as they basically run at you at 30 miles an hour trying to bite your head off. I feel like this kind of zombie just creates more terror in general, as, you know, in most zombie films, the zombies tend to be like the slow walking pace kind of zombies, and like you can kind of take your time with those kind of zombies. But with the zombies you see in this film and in other films that I can think of that have these kind of zombies, like 28 Days Later and whatnot, like, you literally have no time to react sometimes. Like, you know that they're coming, and just seeing the sight of just a group or horde of zombies running at you at full speed is genuinely horrifying. And the fact that this film has those kind of zombies just adds to the tension and the horror and the adrenaline that the viewers, the characters, just everyone just has, because, you know, these terrifying monsters are coming at you. You know what I mean? And, you know, again, like, this film nails this aspect of the zombie film. And I feel like, hopefully, like, this the choice of having these running zombies was a stylistic choice, because I just simply do not think that this film would be the same if the zombies were like the slow walking pace types, because they just do not have that extra bit of fear that you would want in a zombie film like this. So, you know, it's all of this is just great in this regard. And I feel like, considering we're talking about action, like the type of zombies that we see, I should also comment on how intelligent the writing is when it comes to like very like important decisions that the characters make in this film. As you know, as I've already mentioned already, like, these kind of zombies, you know, that we see in this film force you to think on your feet. And in a lot of situations, for the survivors on this train, they have to think on their feet. And they end up doing a lot of creative things to try to outsmart the zombies, which honestly, is honestly very impressive and very refreshing to see on screen. As, you know, for me, like, one of my big pet peeves about the zombie genre sometimes, I say sometimes because most of the time it doesn't happen, but sometimes there's this situations in a TV show or a movie where, you know, the characters who are trying to survive from the zombies just do such a mind-bogglingly stupid decision where, like, it's so stupid to the point where, like, it makes the audience just feel stupid watching it, if that makes sense. Like, it's one of those situations, like, this is a very American, like, specific example, but there's, like, a commercial sometimes that airs here from a car insurance company called Geico, and there's a particular, like, zombie theme commercial where basically, like, the protagonists in the commercial are basically trying to hide from a murderer, basically. It's basically a Texas Chainsaw Massacre inspired commercial. And there's, like, a point where, like, this ensemble of protagonists are trying to decide how to escape from this guy, right? And, you know, there's two options that they see. One is to hop in a car that is ready to go, and they can just drive off, and they'll be fine. Or there's the option of hiding behind a dark, dimly lit garage with a bunch of chainsaws hanging from the roof. And you know what the ensemble, the protagonists decide to do? They go and hide behind the bit of chainsaws, which honestly personifies what I'm trying to talk about. As you know, sometimes in zombie movies, the characters in the story make stupid decisions like that. And it says a lot when a commercial that doesn't even relate to zombies really at all talks about it, because it's a trope and it's a thing. So for this particular movie in Train to Busan, I'm honestly glad they never did that at all, as most of the decisions that, you know, the characters do in this movie are intelligent. It comes from, you know, some really crafty, very creative, rational thought. Now, granted, there is a moment where one of the Ajushis in the train just inadvertently decides to open, you know, the door for all the zombies to come in, because her sister, who has turned into a zombie at this point, you know, wants, you know, basically she wants to reunite with her sister, even though she's a zombie. Which, okay, granted, yes, that kind of falls in line with these mind-bogglingly stupid decisions that I'm talking about, but I think in that particular case, I feel like I can kind of pass. I can live with that kind of decision, as you know, it at the very least comes out of some reason that I can believe in. And that's basically the fact that, you know, the Ajushi wants to reunite with her loved one that turned into a zombie. And, you know, let's be honest, like in that particular situation, I think it's totally okay to be a bit irrational and a bit, you know, erratic with your thinking. So in that regard, I think it's okay. But in general, most times, some stupid decision that you see in a zombie flick just burn my head out, if you get what I mean. Which is a very long way of saying this whole thing. Hopefully all that makes sense, guys. But anyway, like all of this action, all of this drama, this equates to an ending that is just incredibly satisfying and very emotional as well. As you know, by the end, Seok-woo had to sacrifice himself because he got bit by the traitorous and incredibly evil Yeon-suk, because he basically got infected while trying to escape the zombies. And you know, by the end, literally, it's basically the Su-on and Song-kyung, who is the now, I guess, widow of Yoon Sang-wa, who died quite earlier in the film. And you know, by the end, like, I mean, I just love how this movie like tries to like pull a fast one on you by the end, where there's genuinely a point where, you know, the army, the South Korean army, is genuinely about to shoot Su-on and Song-kyung because they thought that they were zombies, which, by the way, I feel like kind of adds insult to injury at that point, because, you know, literally at that point, we literally went through a montage of an emotional song and like emotional moments of Su-on saying goodbye to her dad as he heroically like lets go from the locomotive and just, you know, just gets eaten alive by zombies. Like, you know, I feel like at this point it's kind of a bit too much for everyone involved, but they decide to throw this in anyway, which, you know, I think at this point kind of makes people bawl and just be incredibly sad, because, you know, everyone's just kind of on the brink of watching everyone, all of the survivors of this train, just die in the most tragic way possible. But just before the sniper, the South Korean sniper, tries to shoot Su-on, she all of a sudden sings Aloha Oi, which I think in the context of this film is incredibly appropriate for the situation at hand. And it also, by the way, also links back to the very beginning of the film, as Su-an was actually quite sad when she was about to leave to go see her mother in Busan, as she had like a moment of stage fright at a performance that she performed in, where she had to sing Aloha Oi, but she couldn't, unfortunately, because she had stage fright. And now she belts out this very haunting and very sad rendition of this song, as you know, it does encapsulate just the pure sadness of the whole thing when you think about it. And also, to provide some extra context about Aloha Oi as well, because you know, I'm from Hawaii and I'm quite familiar with the song. Ironically enough, like the way that this, as I've already mentioned already, like the way that this song is featured in this particular movie actually makes a lot of historical sense as well, as the song originally was actually supposed to be like a goodbye song. Like it's supposed to be like a melancholic song of goodbye, because the song's creator, Queen Liliuokalani, who was the last king, I mean not king, sorry, but last queen of the Kingdom of Hawaii, actually wrote this song after she got overthrew by a bunch of American missionaries, which is a whole other thing. But basically, like this song is in response to the fact that she basically got her kingdom taken away. So, you know, I think with that extra context, I think it just adds to just the sadness about the end, because, you know, just because this song, not the song, but just because this whole film was so epic and so adrenaline pumping and all that, I feel like by the end, you are allowed to just kind of just take in what has actually happened. And it's the fact that, well, for one, I guess from a broader scale, like basically the entire country of Korea is basically turned into zombies, which isn't great. In the more specific context of the film itself, like everyone that you knew and everyone you come to love in this film has basically died, except for Su-an and Song-kyung, which isn't like, you know, I'm like, don't get me wrong, like I was happy by the end that they both survived at least, but at the end of the day, it's just horrendously sad. And I'm just glad that, you know, the film gives you that opportunity to kind of grasp and realize like the gravity of the whole situation, as the whole thing's crazy. It's nuts. Like sometimes like it's just I just can't help but feel that maybe like the characters who went through this whole thing were just running on adrenaline alone, which honestly I wouldn't blame them at that point. Like it's honestly crazy. And as I've already said already, like, you know, giving this time to just properly reflect on what just happened just adds on to the sadness that you're supposed to feel in a zombie film like this. And it just caps off such a excellent film within the zombie genre, as it just generally had everything. It had the action, it had the drama, it had the emotion of the whole thing. And when you add that with the just the flair that some K-drama or films, K-films have sometimes when it comes to emotions and the way that they take advantage of, you know, you tools like emotional music and just emotional acting in general, like it just creates such a emotional film. And I think the point of this whole film in general is to make you feel emotionally exhausted. And that's exactly how I felt, honestly, from the end of the film, because it was such a roller coaster ride of a film. And I think that just speaks to how excellently done everything was when it comes to writing, to set design, to directing, everything. It was honestly perfect. And you know, it says a lot when, you know, I say that this movie is like 5 years old now, and no movie ever since has honestly topped it, in my opinion. Like, you know, it's such a, as I've already said already, like, it's such a perfect movie. And I honestly don't think that this film will be topped for a very long time, and that's saying a lot. So again, it's such a roller coaster ride of a film and a brilliant zombie film that honestly, like, if you were in a situation where you met someone where they've never seen a zombie movie ever, like, I would honestly just show them this film and tell them to not watch any other zombie films again, because this is honestly the film that you need to watch for this kind of genre of media, and you generally don't really need to watch any of the others because they're generally not as good at this film. So yeah, with that being said, that's basically my thoughts on Train to Busan. Really, this whole podcast has just been like 40 minutes of my rambled thoughts about this film, as it's genuinely brilliant, it's great, it's fantastic. And honestly, if you've seen this film already and you haven't seen it in a while, it doesn't hurt to watch it again. Honestly, it's still really good. And I mean, I guess it shouldn't really be a surprise because it's like a 5-year-old movie, and that's not really that long, but still, it's an excellent movie, and it's available wherever you watch your media. I should note though, if you're in the States and you use Netflix, unfortunately, I think the contract that Netflix had to have Train to Busan on their site, I think expired, as Train to Busan isn't on American Netflix anymore. So you're gonna have to use other means to find the film. And so, you know, there's that, unfortunately. But really, like, you can literally like go anywhere to look for this film, and you can probably find it and enjoy it, as it's still a very, very popular film, and it's just a brilliant film. And who knows, I'll probably watch it honestly as like a casual thing to do because it's just that good of a film, you know. But anyway, on that note, that concludes this week's episode of the K-Poporama podcast. I really hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode of the podcast. I'll admit, it's kind of a bit of a rambly one this time around. So if you're not into that kind of thing, I kind of apologize for that. But hopefully you guys enjoyed my thoughts on such a fantastic film in Train to Busan, as I really enjoyed having the opportunity to watch this movie once again. As you know, as I've already said already, it's a brilliant film. But anyway, wherever you are in this gigantic world of ours, thank you so much for listening in to this week's episode of the K-Pop Rumble Podcast. I really hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode, and be sure to tune in next week Monday for another episode. But until then, this is Gian from K-Pop Rumble signing off. Take care and have a brilliant week, everyone. Peace. Bye-bye. Aloha. Bye-bye.